We've got really great news to tell people about Mary Costakis.
Yes, this is fantastic news. Just a little bit after midday yesterday, the two-year legal battle in the federal court where Mary Costakis was accused of engaging in anti-Semitism and racial discrimination, the case has been discontinued. And the reason why it's been discontinued and therefore the charges have been dropped, I understand that they've reached a settlement. Maybe it's appropriate we read from the statement that she put out on social media yesterday. After 2 years of legal proceedings against me have been withdrawn. This is a win for every Australian who values our democratic right to freedom of political expression. Zionist zealotry has had to beat a retreat from what was going to be a highly damaging trial. I've spent 2 years doing nothing but preparing my defence in a case aimed at silencing me, a case that would have cost the average Australian their home. I want to thank my fellow Australians who recognised the significance of what we stand to lose, stood with me and stepped up to assist me to launch my defence. The purpose of journalism is to get to the truth fiercely and to hold power to account. This is a win for press freedom, which has prevailed. Then she goes on to thank her legal team, but we'll just skip ahead to this part. Australia must stop disregarding the orders of the International Court of Justice, which were clear. We're obliged under international law to take meaningful action to prevent genocide in Palestine and to do all in our power to bring about an end to apartheid, hypocrisy, double standards, and a lack of courage are aiding the destruction of a framework intended to protect against the worst excesses of state power.
Extraordinary stuff. More strength to her arm. She is a fantastic person, Mary Costakis. If you saw the work that she did following the Julian Assange case, she was indefatigable. Yep. And it's a great, must be such a relief for her.
And an important thing to bring up is the fact why this case was brought up is all she was doing was putting up social media posts that were just
factually correct.
And there's obviously there's parallels with what happened to Antoinette Latouf when she was working casually at ABC Radio and what happened to her. Perhaps we could call it as another example of lawfare.
Wiping people out because it's costly and it takes people's all of their effort for years and years and years. That actually ties in with this other quite interesting little tidbit that you got about Anthropic is building PR crime.
Pre-crime.
Sorry, yeah. I left an E off and I thought, that's not quite right.
So, this is something I picked up off an Instagram feed, but there's been some reporting from the American Prospect this week that states that Anthropic, that's the company that's built one of the most popularly used AI engines, is building pre-crime surveillance technology. And it's being configured so they're actually going to target AI activists. Not activists who are generated by AI. What we mean is that activists who are questioning the use of AI and the prolificacy of it. Any of you recall that film that was Minority Report based on the Philip K. Dick short story?
Where they decide that will get you before the crime actually occurs.
It's interesting.
It goes into the American PR campaigns around fear and loathing and all the racist stuff that's being developed through the ICE fascist approach to. Law and order, what they call law and order.
Yeah, we're probably all aware that shortly after this second iteration of the Trump presidency, he appointed Elon Musk for the ostensible reason that he would get access to government data and data about their citizens to make things efficiently, but it may have been used for something else.
Oh, well, no doubt, no doubt. Nothing they say is for what it's for. It's always look around, look around. Donald Trump did something absolutely bizarre. He promised to pay a dividend, in inverted commas, of $5,000 to every American at the Republican National Convention. Obviously, a thinly veiled attempt at bribery. It would cost $1.3 trillion to actually fulfill that promise.
Yeah, and again, I only saw an excerpt of this speech. I didn't have the stomach to watch the entirety of it. But Trump was talking in grandiose terms that the US economy and is doing so well because we're doing so well. I'm going to pay a dividend of $5,000 to every American. But surely Donald Trump is someone who we're told, you know, he was a supposedly astute business person. Surely he must know the concept of shares and how dividends work, that if you own a stake in a company, that the dividend is your percentage of allocation of the profits. Whereas we're all aware that America is heavily in trillions of dollars of debt because of these constant wars that's going on, and supporting regimes as well that are engaging in wars such as and genocide like Israel. So how can we argue that America is doing well?
And also America isn't just a business.
That's right. It's not just a business. And you know, the dividends aren't going to all society. I mean, they don't have a system like Medicare. They do not have a system whereby someone can go to a hospital, and if they're ill, at least they can get some kind of medical treatment and compassion. It's not like that at all.
Like in the movies.
No, it's not like in the movies.
It's really funny because you watch movies, American movies. So recently I was watching something and someone had a heart attack and they took them to the hospital. And I was thinking, would they actually treat that person? I mean, that was just going on in the back of my mind because it was just a feature. And I'm thinking, they're just assuming that this would happen in real life.
In
Australia, it would happen.
It would happen, but probably the reality in America is that if you don't have insurance coverage and if you don't have a job that provides you with that insurance coverage, and if the health management organization doesn't make an assessment that you have some kind of condition that they won't cover you for, you won't get treated with the care that you should be given.
Which is quite bizarre.
Quite bizarre. Just quite really bizarre.
Anyway, there's some rather disturbing tidbits coming out of Europe. Volkswagen being repurposed for Rafael weapons systems.
Yeah, so again, this is something I came across this week. I think it was Wednesday. Volkswagen in Germany, there's actually a factory. It's actually been repurposed for a company that's linked to build weapon systems for Rafael. That's fairly disturbing. And also, if you maybe listeners are aware of history with the origin of Volkswagen, the people's wagon,
mm-hmm.
Annie, do you know a little bit?
No, well, it's just that there's so many of the German existent companies like Seismann and others that have got very disturbing.
Yes.
And some of the clothing factories, I can't even remember their name, that used to make the uniforms for the, anyway, go on. They still exist, but they're doing high fashion now.
Yes, yes. Well, Volkswagen was the people's wagon, originated in the Nazi times.
Business is business, man.
Business is business. Business.
It has no heart. But also on September the 6th, the far-right Alternative for Germany, the AfD party, won a state election in the eastern German region of Saxony-Anhalt, which is the first time since the Nazis that this has actually happened.
Yeah.
So disturbing.
Very disturbing.
Yep.
Very disturbing.
They won 44% of the vote, which is, you know, considerable. But I don't know the ins and outs of how they function, you know, what their legislative arrangements are.
Yeah, I'm not that au fait either with the German parliamentary system, but I'll perhaps draw an analogy in that with Italy's case. Historically, jokes were made about Italy because it seemed like there'd be a change of government every couple of years, whereas now Giorgia Meloni, who has commands about the last election, about 30% of the national vote, and her party is Fratelli d'Italia, which means Brothers of Italy, and that is links to the parties after the fall of the Mussolini regime, that were it links to the fascist party. So that's perhaps showing that perhaps a bit of mainstreaming of perhaps somewhat far right views.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, there's a concerted effort across the world.
Across the world,
They're not individual countries. There were also footage of masked fellows walking through towns in England over the last week as well, doing Portsmouth and places like that. And the most disturbing element of the reports is that the police did a very softly approach towards those people while being absolutely aggressive. They've been told to be aggressive to anti-genocide activists. So there's obviously a very strong element of mainstream believing that they can use this rise of fascism either as a tool for their own power or to frighten people into voting for them, so that because they're the best of a bad lot, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and then maybe we can talk about the local context is how is it that in the last 2 years or so, we're seeing these far right rallies.
Yeah,
we've seen on like an ABC reports a couple of years ago of training in the forests.
That's right.
Yeah,
and if you look at The Age this morning, I was just flipping through. There's about three or four pictures, headshots of One Nation's leader. Publicity works. If you continually have these images, you continually have these fluff pieces, you continually talk about these people, then you make them serious contenders. So the mainstream are obviously beating the pot for this level of notoriety.
Yeah, and Annie, do you think a part of it, if we just talk about Pauline Hanson and people of her ilk here, do you think a part of it is, if they can say statements and they sound that would have been
improbable and outrageous,
but incrementally,
yes,
it gets out there,
yeah,
and then it becomes the mainstream.
Do you think it might be the lobster theory?
The lobster theory?
Oh, the lobster theory is that live lobsters are put into pots of water and then you heat them up slowly and they die.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
That's
aha.
before we move on, we're going to alert you to a special programming soon. It's on later today, and it's in commemoration of the American terrorist action in 1973 against the democratically elected president of Chile, which then threw that country into decades of fascist nightmare. But there's going to be some programming on 3CR that actually commemorates this. But you wanted to talk a little bit about some stuff before we alert you to that fact.
Yeah, just to point out that, like, in the Australian context, what happened is a number of Chileans actually made their way to here and they were exiles.
As one person I met at that time said, we decided we'd leave when the bodies started to arrive down the river.
Yeah. And one one person prominently who made their way to Australia in the 70s was Michelle Bachelet. She lived in Australia, in Sydney, for a few years and went back to Chile, and she eventually became president of Chile and served with distinction and worked in the UN. I'll make some viewing recommendations. If people look out for the films of Patricio Guzman, particularly his Battle of Chile trilogy and Memories of the Light. These films deal with the history and the impacts of the imposition of the Pinochet regime on the Chilean people.